Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from Western Idaho. Our AccuWinda forecast is about 195 degrees outside. I can guarantee you that the solar wind tonight, 360.1 kilometers per second, and the proton count is quietly back down to 2.7. Now safe to go outside without a long sleeve shirt on. Amateur astronomers have photographed NASA's L-Cross spacecraft en route to an October crash landing on the moon. Observers say the spacecraft is surprisingly easy to photograph, and NASA hopes more amateurs will give it a try. The mission is scheduled to blast the moon with a 4,000-pound bullet in October. Spectrographic equipment will be used to analyze the debris. Hopefully they'll be able to see if there's water, oxygen, and other useful minerals and such in the soil. Or we might be able to do something a little more with the moon than stare at it romantically. I know it sounds a little primitive, and that's because it is. We have the capability of putting much more useful equipment on the moon, but it looks like this is their best shot, so to speak. By the way, the target for this explosion is the south pole of the moon. No telescopes on Earth will be able to see the actual impact. Another mystery, to be sure. Tonight we are live on KFNX 1100 in Phoenix, Arizona. We're so happy to be entering that market. We're coming to you through the BBS Radio Network and also through the Conscious Media Network. It is a pleasure to be with you here tonight. I'll tell you a little bit about X Squared Radio, who we are, where we came from. We've been on the air for about 4 years globally on the Internet. Now we are expanding into the AM market. We're glad that you're here tuning in and getting squared. On Friday night, July 10th, Space Shuttle Endeavour was poised to blast off of the International Space Station when a thunderstorm rolled in and lightning struck the launch area at least 11 times. Lightning did not hit the shuttle itself. The powerful bolts were intercepted by the shuttle's lightning protection system. Nevertheless, NASA postponed the launch until tonight, so hopefully somewhere around 7:13 Eastern Standard Time, we should be seeing that thing launch skyward. NASA has plenty of experience with lightning. The Kennedy Space Center is located in Florida, lightning capital of the United States. Modern lightning suppressor systems have been keeping shuttles safe for a long time. But back in November of 1969, an Apollo mission had a very scary moment. Apollo 12's Saturn V rocket was struck by lightning twice during launch. The spacecraft guidance system lost its attitude reference. Dozens of cockpit warning lights were illuminated, and telemetry to mission control was garbled. Amazingly, the mighty rocket continued unperturbed. Astronauts very coolly reset their control systems and the Apollo 12 mission was a success. Who's afraid of a little lightning anyway? People in La Jolla, California are used to earthquakes. But 7:34 this morning, their time, something very strange happened along with the 4.0 magnitude quake. A giant Humboldt squid washed ashore, completely disoriented. Passersby tried to help it back into the sea, but it kept washing back up on the beach until it finally was steered clear of the beach. Helpers did take a great risk, as the giant squid has a parrot beak, suckers and barbs, and can inflict terrible damage on a human body. Earth changes are occurring every day. Keep your eyes open, and you will witness things never before seen. X Squared Radio, what's it all about? Well, 4 years ago, I had the opportunity to try my first broadcast. I'm an engineer and scientist by trade. I'll tell you about a book that I wrote later on in the program, and just happened to get a radio interview, and one thing led to another, and here we are 4 years down the road, the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. X Squared. The reason we picked that name is anything that you put into that little formula comes out positive, except one thing, and that's a little imaginary number called I, which is the square root of negative 1. So we try to leave I out of the program most of the time and let the guests speak. We explore the mysteries of the universe and the Earth by interviewing the very best experts around the world in all kinds of subjects. We'll go over a few of those tonight so that you in the Phoenix market can know what we're all about. Some of you are in your cars driving down the freeway or highway right now, stuck in traffic, listening to your favorite AM radio station, KFNX 1100. During the week, some of the best talk show hosts in the world on this station. And now you have a choice on the weekend as well. We decided to take the high road when it comes to what we're going to speak about on this program. We tend to stick to the scientific, so the mysteries of things like you might see on some of the cable channels on television or here on other radio programs. However, we're not professional broadcasters here. We're interested in the scientific, interested in the engineering, and so have a tendency to ask questions a little bit further down the road, a little higher on the shelf, a little deeper in the drawer. And that's, if you're interested in that kind of knowledge, that kind of discovery, really getting to the truth of the matter, things that really stimulate your mind, and may also answer questions that remain unanswered from your Sunday school classes or your science classes, from your standard education. There are many Earth changes occurring around us right now. They seem to be accelerating, don't they? Earthquakes, strange weather, even the structure of the Earth is coming into question. You've been taught your whole life that we're just a collection of tectonic plates floating around on a molten ball of rock. It might not be that way. Planets might form another way. We might be occupying the surface of a world that is rather tenuous in the darkness of space, hanging on by its fingernails, so to speak. Very rare that there's a planet in space with liquid water that isn't turned to steam in a boiling cauldron or frozen like a block of ice. We actually have the full gamut of temperatures on this world, and we're able to adapt, we're able to thrive. And we're also subject to cataclysms, things that have occurred in our past which have vastly reduced the population suddenly and cataclysmically. And of course there is a lot of evidence that's coming into our realm of attention now. We no longer have to rely on textbooks and instructors who predate the first Gemini missions teaching in our classrooms. We now have the ability to access very advanced very leading edge data, raw data, before it's treated, before it's put into your textbooks and taught to your children, your college students, and even your advanced students who are going back to school. And sometimes that data conflicts with theories that have been hammered out into fact. And so now we have a peculiar situation where our empirical data does not seem to match up with our theories and our facts. A fact, by scientific definition, is either a direct observation or a theory that has not been disproven long enough to become foundation, an axiom, a postulate, if you will, something that's almost irrefutable in science. But as religious as science seems to be, sure enough, from time to time, a new revelation comes out, rendering what was leading-edge science fable and superstition. Nobody really wanted to be the first ones to run the headline that Earth was round and we orbited around the sun. Least of all, the headline, heavier than air flight now possible, or even the speed of sound has been broken. But those records continue to fall, and they're falling today at such an accelerated rate that science is changing as fast as the weather. The wind blows one way and scientists stand up and yell hurrah and raise their banners, and then the wind changes and blows the other way, and another set of scientists stand up and yell hurrah and wave their flags. Who do we follow? Who do we believe? In whom do we place our scientific trust? Should we prepare for 300-mile-an-hour winds, earthquakes, 1,000-foot tidal waves on the coast? Or should we prepare for the greatest consciousness enlightenment in 26,000 years as we near the end of what cosmologists call the precession, a giant zodiacal circle drawn in the heavens by the axis of the Earth? Strange that we would judge and view the universe from Earth perspective. Things might look a little differently if we were sitting on Sirius B or Vega or Arcturus, looking our way instead of their way, a complete different set of zodiacal formations in the heavens. Be that as it may, our solar system is passing through a neighborhood of the universe that we haven't seen in a long time. Perhaps 26,000 years has passed since we've been this way before. Civilizations have grown to their zenith, built amazing cities and icons which tourists sit before in awe, snapping away their digital or image emulsification devices to capture and take home and paste in their scrapbooks. But who built them? Why were they built? Why commit the gross national product of an entire nation to build something so complex, so amazing, so impossible by today's engineering standards as to cause us, the most advanced civilization ever to live on this planet, to scratch our heads and wonder how could a Bronze Age civilization, barely able to properly fire a piece of pottery, build a building like that? Good questions indeed, and we consider all of those questions here on X Squared Radio every week for 3 hours from 5 to 8 Pacific Time. And if you're not getting all 3 hours, you know what to do. Call that affiliate and tell them you'd like to have the third hour of X Squared Radio. We are a talk radio program, and we do invite the other experts in the universe, you. And so we will give you our phone numbers, toll-free anywhere on the planet. You can call in at 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. Scratch it on a post-it note, stick it on your dashboard, or put it under a magnet on your refrigerator, because you're going to need it. We're going to go way beyond your imagination. And when we do, and that question comes to you, we want you to dial that number and call it in. If you are anywhere else on the planet listening to us, as we have many listeners in Australia and the UK and even Greenland, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can get to us. That number is 530-776-5154. 530-776-5154. And we will even take your phone calls if you're on Skype. You can reach us simply by putting in BBS Radio. BBS Radio. We're here live in Western Idaho. Temperature is now down just below 180 degrees, and we're enjoying the weather quite nicely. Stars should be out nicely tonight. By the way, if you're in an area where the space station is coming over, oh, you don't know when it's coming over? Well, that's easy to fix. Just go to heavensabove.com. Make sure to put the dash between those words, heavens-above.com. Go ahead and register. It's free. Put in your city and state, and it will calculate when the International Space Station is flying over you. If you haven't seen it before, you're going to be amazed, because Space Shuttle Endeavour is on its way to connect to it. It's even bigger when the Space Shuttle is connected to it. At 5:30, we're going to bring on our good friend James Gilliland. He had a conference up at his ranch at E-SETI in Trout Lake, Washington. And some amazing things happen up there every single year. We're going to bring him on for about a half an hour to explain strange goings on in the sky, and the fact that it might not even be so unusual up there. If you've never had a close encounter of the third kind, well, you might want to make a trip up there for a weekend and just check it out. We talk often about the structure of the Earth here on this program. In about 7 minutes before the bottom of the hour, when we bring James Gilliland on, and we bring geological and even cosmological experts on this program. We have had the late Tom Van Flandern on this program, one of the most widely published astronomers in the world, and left 6 hours of just amazing pontification on the formation of the Earth, the placement of black holes and comets in the galaxy. If you miss those programs, which you most certainly did if you're just tuning in now, you can always reach them, because we post all of the archives, over 200 hours of archives that you can listen to for less than the price of a cup of coffee, about $20 a year, just by going to xsquaredradio.com, click on the subscribe button, and sign up, and you can access all of those archives. And they're all in MP3 format, so just download them on your iPod or listen to them while you're at your workstation during the day. I'm sure your boss won't mind, because it'll stimulate your mind and make you a better employee all the way around. Again, this is Brooks Agnew. This program is X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from Western Idaho. So happy to be on KFNX 1150,000 watts. You're tuning in so you can get squared. Oftentimes we receive space photography of Earth, and it's kind of interesting to turn the satellites around and look at Earth now and then instead of distant stars and galaxies forming and dust clouds and the occasional comet. One of the strange things that NASA discovers when they look at Earth from time to time is that there is an aurora over both poles at the same time. It has really drawn into question the theory, the ideas, the hypotheses behind what causes the aurora, the borealis over the North Pole and the one over the South Pole. Is it caused by the solar wind from the sun, either latent or sweeping around from some coronal mass ejection? Or is it caused by ions coming out of the Earth, sort of like a Earth-like quasar, shooting energy up out of the poles, striking our atmosphere and making it ignite into a beautiful light show? We thought we had the answer for a long, long time, until that picture came out showing the aurora over both poles at the same time. Theorists scratched their head and said we need to take more measurements, and so in February of 2007 they launched the Themis probe. Actually, I think it was February of 2008. My apologies. Anyway, that satellite was launched. Actually, it was a nose cone with five satellites in it. Those five satellites orbit the Earth and arrange themselves from time to time in an exact formation that allows them to take a measurement in a linear fashion, like a giant ruler from, about the space shuttle orbit on out to about 300 miles. And occasionally, when an aurora occurs while those satellites are in this peculiar orbit, they take measurements. One time, there was a burst, just an energy burst that popped into existence between satellites 3 and 5. Some of the energy came to Earth, and some of it went heading out into space. When the energy reached Earth, there was an aurora borealis. That was the first cause and effect that actually happened that was witnessed. However, the report that was issued was a little questionable. The observation was that some kind of cosmic bullet popped into existence, left behind by the sun, not in direct sunlight, but left behind by the sun, and that's what caused the aurora borealis. It hasn't repeated itself. It's a little difficult to get data when you only have one point. It's like being a source in the middle of the universe, all alone, with no stars or planets around you. Not enough data. Not enough data. The fact is that when we plot the solar wind against the occurrence of aurora, they rarely line up. Something else is going on there. Something's brushing up against our reality and leaving an evidence that we can't make any sense of. Maybe you can out there while you're driving your car up and down the freeway, or while you're sitting at your favorite workstation. If you're live between 5 and 8 p.m. Pacific time, you can always reach us. Phone numbers again, toll free, 888-228-4494. And if you don't have access to toll free, like you're in another country, like Mexico or Australia or New Zealand, you can reach us at 530-776-5154. Hopefully, this level of talk radio, science, discovery, mysteries of the universe, will be interesting to you in the Phoenix market. We hope that it is. We're happy to be there. In about 2 minutes, we're going to have James Gilliland on. James Gilliland has a location in Trout Lake, Washington, that for a number of years, most experts agree, is probably the hottest UFO activity spot in the nation, possibly in North America. And we want you to hear his story, what went on there, and how you can participate and have an experience of your own. Once in a while, we consider questions that you may have never heard before, like, how many moons does Earth have? Well, your average elementary school student should be able to say, one. I can see it. It's right up there. But the fact is, Earth has two moons. That's right, two moons. Carithni has a horseshoe orbit that cycles every 770 years, and is expected to hang around us for at least another 3,000 years. It's due back here in 2285. It might not be around then in this form, but the fact is that Earth has two moons, and our sun is part of a binary solar system. Yes, absolutely. Two stars orbiting around one another. One of our favorite topics here at X Squared Radio is UFOs. By the way, there are a couple things we do not talk about here at X Squared Radio. We don't talk about ghosts, and we don't talk about conspiracy theories. There are plenty of stations out there that do that. If you like that kind of thing, I'm sure you can find them. Here we want to concentrate on the high road. We are at the leading edge of exploration, whether it's in the ice or under the water in the depths of space. We'll bring that to you the best that we can without coloring it, and let you decide whether it is truth or not. Excuse me. I know you've heard about them all the time, UFOs, but you might not think there are any current events out there. Well, there are. But before we get into them, let's go ahead and take a call. Dan from Florida, you're on the program. Welcome.
Yes, sir. How you doing today? I know you got a professional coming up in like a minute or two, something like that, so I'm literally just going to stay on the phone for about a minute. Just a quick question for you. Just a quick question for you real quick. I was just wondering about the expedition. Now, the plans are you're still going with it, right?
Well, yes and no. The thing about the expedition is it does require this one particular ship, and that ship is called the Yamal, or its sister ship, the Captain Kolibnikov. Both of these are Russian vessels. And we have tried to charter some other ships, and we tried to charter a Norwegian ship. And although the ship could be chartered and had 500 seats instead of 100 seats on it, the Russians would not allow it to sail north of the 81st parallel. We need to go to the 86th parallel. So that got nixed. So we are looking for a solution. And right now it happens to be a financial solution that we're looking for, because we need to charter one of those two ships. And I guess we've been going about it wrong, and we're going to drop back and punt and try it again.
Okay, so as far as right now, it's sort of like questionable. Do you got a date? Like, I thought it was supposed to be August. Like, what time is it supposed to be in August? Like, what's the day?
It was supposed to be August 17th. The problem with that date, of course, is that you have to charter the ship 6 months in advance, which means...
So it's going to be 6 months from now then.
Yep, it's going to be 2010, and actually there are only five slots in 2010 that are open, so we are now trying to find that one or two individuals that have been, received the call that they're supposed to help support our expedition, and we hope that they choose to do so.
Okay, all right. All right, sir, well, I appreciate you taking my call. I know you got a guest coming on. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Dan. All right, my guest tonight is James Gilliland. He owns a site near Mount Adams that is visited by thousands of people each year who are seeking a close encounter of the third, fourth, and even fifth kind. His name is James Gilliland. Welcome to the program, James.
Oh, great to be on the show again.
Great to have you, as always. James and I are friends going back about 4 years. I have been up at the ranch, we affectionately call it the ranch, many times, like five times in the last 4 years, and your yearly event, the Earth Transformation Conference, just took place July 4th. Any amazing events happened this weekend?
You know, it's still ongoing. The ships are still flying, and I know on the 6th, right when we were closing out the conference on the 6th, as usual, they never come exactly, sometimes they tell me exactly when they're coming, when we have other news crews or investigators out there, but this year they just kind of left it up. I wasn't sure exactly when they were coming, but they did buzz over throughout the entire conference, but on the 6th they came in really low, and four massive ships came in one after another. I was looking at the video, Renato Longato, one of the speakers, actually filmed all of these ships. So here we have the speakers, you know, getting involved in the filming process, not only being witnesses, but filming it, and at the same time documenting all the other people there. There were 38 witnesses. It was right at the end of the conference when everything was winding down. But we counted at least 38 witnesses in the field. I don't know how many other people were milling around that actually saw it. But it's all on record, and you can go to the As You Wish Talk Radio on Station 1 to check it out. We have the clip up on the site now, so it's there for anybody that wants to see it. And it was just an amazing finale, you know, for the event. It was like the cosmic cheerleaders came in and did their little dazzle for everybody to see them.
Well, I know you had visitors from as far away as New York and Virginia Beach. And The interesting thing was, as I met with them during the weekend, they got daytime shots, daytime pictures of craft flying over that mountain.
Yeah, we were just looking at a whole series of photos where people were taking pictures of these buzzards that were flying over, turkey vultures. And you can see the turkey vulture clear as a bell, and then you see the ship right next to it or right above it. And several, ships there. And they're definitely a ship. They're not real defined because, you know, as we all know, the energy fields distort the image a little bit around the ship. But you can see clear as a bell. You can see a very defined buzzard, you know, in the picture. And then right above it or right alongside it is this wonderful ship, you know, that's sitting right there.
Well, one of the things that we've realized over the years as we've photographed dozens and dozens of these things is they don't necessarily appear as a real crisp, you know, metallic ship up in the sky. They often have the edges of the picture kind of fuzzed out. Why is that?
You know, my understanding is that they're not totally physical. They haven't stepped down into our frequency. And they're just outside of our frequency. And we were just talking about that earlier. You know, one of the women here that took a whole bunch of photos of these ships, she says, why aren't they clear? You know, why aren't they? She goes, how come the camera's seeing them and I can't? And I said, well, the camera's picking up much more of the light spectrum than your eyes. And if you meditate and do your spiritual work, pretty soon you become clairvoyant and you can see them. But right now, because the cameras do pick up a lot more of the light spectrum, they're actually, you know, getting them on film.
Well, one of the other things that there was another scientist up there named John Riley mentioned to us was that the sampling rate of the human eye, the human transducer that we call the eyeball, it doesn't really sample fast enough to get an image that's going to pop in and pop out of view. That's why we can go to the movies and watch frames flashing at 29 frames a second, because we can't see the space in between the flashes. And perhaps it is the digital camera that does what we call an additive image. It takes the previous image and adds it to the image it's trying to take for several hundredths of a second, sometimes even a half a second, depending on the light conditions. And what happens is, in the in-between times where the human eye would miss it, the digital camera does pick it up.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen, too, that if we raise our frequencies and our vibration, we actually start seeing into these higher frequency worlds. And that's what these beings are. A lot of them are in the infrared spectrum and the ultraviolet spectrum. And we have the ability to sense and see those worlds, but not with our standard, you know, conscious vision, you might say. We have to develop our spiritual vision. And and what I've seen here, too, is we have a lot of infrared spotlights out here and the, you know, third generation night vision, and we have infrared cameras. And they're just picking up all kinds of things and ships that you can't see, you know, with the naked eye, and the light spheres and the orbs, and they're pulsing and flying against the wind, and we have all that footage on the site. So we pretty much laid to rest the argument that orbs are just dust, you know, or rain, you know, because these things are flying against, you know, you can see the trees being bent in the background, and this wind coming in from the west, and these orbs are flying straight into it, and they have their own energy fields, and they have, when you blow up the pictures of them, they have faces, and it's pretty undeniable right now. I mean, the evidence is just overwhelming that these are entities that are on a higher frequency than we are, and we're filming them. They're definitely not dust or not water particles that a lot of people are trying to explain them away.
Well, speaking of evidence, I mentioned New York. We actually have Ramon from New York. He was there, and he did take some daytime photographs, which were just stunning. Welcome to the program, Ramon.
How are you gentlemen doing? It's a pleasure to be on the show again.
Yeah, good to hear from you again.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start. That weekend blew my mind. For those of you who are skeptics who say, no, you know, I need to witness, well, going up to James Place is definitely, and it's not like he's one of those people that's charging you an arm and a leg. It's actually really cheap, and I was there with a sure amount of cash, and I was able to stay there and on site. But as far as daytime shots, I was taking pictures of the mountains with my girlfriend because she loves scenery. And some guy comes up to me and says, hey, did you get anything? I said, no, I'm just taking pictures of the mountain. So let me look at the pictures. He looks at the pictures. What's that? I get in closer, and it's a ship. The only thing is I couldn't tell if it was a triangle or a stereotypical ship.
Wow, that's really amazing. And Ramon really did take a great shot. Just, and that thing was like 13 miles away, but you can zoom in on it, and it's very clear.
Yeah, James, you should have a copy of that picture.
Be sure and send us a copy, you know, so we can put it in the file.
I gave it to, what's her name again? The girl who's in charge of the computer.
Yvonne?
Yeah.
Probably Yvonne. Great. Okay, so we have I know there are some other people. We had two people when they were leaving the ranch. They took a picture just outside their window as they were driving. And both people got these exact same discs flying right next to their car. And they didn't see them with their naked eye. They were just shooting a picture, you know, of the scenery because it's so beautiful up here. And right next to the car, flying right alongside them, are two beautiful discs.
Well, James and Ramon, you know, years ago there was a group of professionals, a think tank called the Brookings Institution. And what they did is they put their heads together and they tried to calculate what would happen to American society if the government were to release everything that they know about UFOs, that we're not alone in the universe, there might be aliens here on Earth. And they predicted that society would collapse and people would panic and run in every direction. Did you see any of that happen when these ships made themselves known up there?
Actually, quite opposite. Quite opposite anything. I don't know if it was because a group of people that were up there were truth seekers, and that's the reason why, compared to the average person who would just shrug it off, well, as a bunch of nutcases, you know, going up there and wearing tinfoil hats, which none of us wore tinfoil hats. I don't know if you guys were passing the hats around, that's why. But.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I've seen is that these reports greatly underestimate, you know, the populace. And, you know, they did a Time CNN port, and well over 80% of people believe that UFOs do exist and there is a government cover-up. So, to me, when you have over 80%, you have to ask who are these people serving by, you know, continuing in this cover-up. But, you know, here, as everybody saw, everybody was just cheering and hollering and saying, come down, you know, land. You know, everybody wanted to meet and greet these beings. And, you know, if we had the same attitude with our government and we had a military stand down and didn't greet them with aggression, you know, they would. They would come down and hang out and probably share in technologies beyond our imagination with, you know, help us turn this planet around and, you know, end disease. And they have fuelless energy technologies. They could clean up the environment. You know, these beings have transcended all war, all disease, all the things that we're dealing with right now. And people ask me, why are you focusing in this area? And I said, because these beings can best help us get through the days to come and the changes that we're undergoing.
Well, it goes without saying, if some society has figured out how to do it without blowing themselves up, it might be a good school for us to learn from. What is the feeling of the people who have had these experiences? Are they afraid? Do they have joy? Have they figured out some secret that helps them get through the day? What is the feeling of the people that have actually had these encounters?
You know, my experience is the people that I have talked to, especially people that come up here at the ranch, they just feel totally joyful and blissful and excited. You know, there's an air of excitement in the air, and you feel these energies even before the ships appear. You feel this kind of a giddy, joyful energy. There's nothing fearful or about it. You know, unfortunately Hollywood has tainted everybody's mind, you know, with all these movies. But, you know, the bottom line is these beings are our ancestors and they're returning and we've gone through a lot of, as, you know, Michael Cremo would say, devolution. You know, we've evolved from some very advanced beings that had all these technologies and, you know, through the cataclysms and the other things that affected the earth and the wars, you know, great wars, you know, with extreme technologies. So, you know, here we're starting over again as primitives and evolving back to where we once were. And not everybody had to go through that process because a lot of them continued to evolve and had technology and kept their technology and even improved on it. So they're extremely advanced, you know, both spiritually and technologically.
Well, go ahead, Ramon.
No, I was going to talk about an experience. I'm sitting there in the ranch and looking up and, you know, this ship comes over. It looks like a satellite to me, but then it lights up. And this is the first day it lights up. We have very few that day and goes the opposite direction. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I didn't know satellites could do that. Or the other explanation, fireflies that the wind picked up so high up. You know, I didn't know they can actually do that. It's amazing.
Yeah, we don't have any fireflies,
of course.
No, exactly. There are no satellites that make U-turns.
Yeah.
But the other thing was, as I'm looking at these ships, from the corner of my eye, I kept seeing this giant man, taller than you, Dr. Agnes, like maybe like 9, but it was like all I could see is the shadow of it from the corner of my eye. And every time I look, and I was next to some other guys, Javier and his nephew, Miguel, and I'm like, I keep seeing something from the corner of my eye next to this woman, and I must have seen him like 4 times and look, and not there. And I'm just like, I wonder who that was.
Well, you know what? It's funny you mentioned that, because about 5 minutes ago, I was looking at a picture that somebody took of the group out in the field, and there's this huge being. I mean, he's got to be 8-9 feet tall, standing there right next to all of you. And somebody actually caught it on film. You know, so it's funny that you actually saw that with your own eyes, you know, clairvoyantly, because we actually have that on film.
Oh, geez, I got to go back to the site. Well, I'm just listening, and I want to say to both you gentlemen, thank you for the experience. I've actually felt like I carry some of that energy back with me, because before, you know, living in New York, you're kind of fearful of things might happening, muggings and things like that. And now it's just like, that's gone.
Okay.
Which is amazing. I don't know, I guess it was either the Kunlun class or the many things that we experienced up there. But I just want to say thank you very much. And I'll keep
going. Oh, you're welcome.
Excellent. Thank you so much for the call, Ramon.
Yeah, we'll have to get that picture up on the site. We don't have it up on the site yet, but it's amazing. You know, actually, it looks like something out of the day the earth stood still. And,
yeah, it does. It looks like a, you know, very top hat kind of metallic ship, but you can still see that plasma distortion around it.
And No, I mean the being that's standing out in the field looks like that. Looks very similar to that robot in the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still, Gort or whatever his name was.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, this thing's 9 feet tall and it's standing out right next to everybody in the field. And,
wow.
And you can see through it. It's kind of transparent. But it's undeniable. I mean, it's a massive being just standing there.
One of the things that people are paying a lot of attention to these days is the idea that our solar system is traveling to, shall we call it, an old neighborhood, a neighborhood we haven't seen in our galaxy for about 26,000 years. The Mayans called it, you know, the end times. In biblical times, it's called the end of the age, the Santella Aeon. Do you see or imagine, you know, Earth changes on a cosmic level taking place around this peculiar date?
Well, you know, they gave us, what's interesting is Michal Ledwith was there, and he gave a talk about, you know, 2012 Armageddon or, you know, Ascension, or I'm not sure exactly what the topic was. But I thought that was quite interesting because he came up with the exact same information we received, is that due to a lot of the, you know, with the Earth's magnetic fields down and large holes in it, and the sun getting ready to kick back on, it's been totally dormant, but now it's starting up again for the solar cycle 24. But basically, we're getting the same information that by the winter of 2010, we're going to start experiencing all the way up to that, you know, some changes, but it's going to kick in full swing after that, and we might need to prepare for not having a grid for a while, you know, due to the solar cycle and massive coronal mass ejections or flares hitting the planet.
Now, for those people that live in cities, they're used to seeing a lot of lights. They're used to having maybe a two-day supply of food in their house. They eat out two times a day. They have a routine of allowing society to take care of most of their needs, and that frees them up to do the things they like to do, like going to the movies and working and dating and, you know, enjoying art and things like that. They don't have to spend half their day preparing or finding their next meal.
Yeah.
What does this mean to be off the grid for someone who lives in a metropolitan area?
Well, basically, we need to figure out how we're going to cook our food, where our water's coming from. It doesn't need to be pumped to get to you. You know, is your sewage being pumped out? You know, basically what happens if the water lines break, or the pumps aren't working for the water lines, or if the sewage isn't moving where it's supposed to be moving. And, you know, it doesn't take very long for a house to become toxic, basically. You know, when the P traps dry up, or the water's not flowing, or can't flush the toilets, or whatever, it takes a couple of days to get kind of ugly, you know, in a house.
Yeah.
And not to be graphic, but that's just the bottom line. And we need to realize how we're going to, you know, it might be a good idea to get a little camp stove and, you know, some propane, and just to be on the safe side, you know, stock up with some canned food, or buy a bag of rice and beans. They're cheap, you know, and have some way to prepare your meals. And the rest of it, you know, is pretty easy, basically.
Right, right. And this is really good advice, especially for those people that live in condos or in high rises. It's not impossible to keep, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe in a month, a supply on hand. And you know, perhaps it wouldn't be that bad of an idea if you live out in the country. Of course, you can store more. But in the city, you probably need to think like you might have to move. If the whole city goes dark, there may be no advantage to living on the 17th floor anymore. 17 flights of stairs can get a little old, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. You know, also, too, you know, if the grid goes down, just remember the gas, you know, you have a total gridlock on the highways. The pumps aren't working. You know, the food can't get in. It can't get trucked in. It just becomes a real mess very quickly. And I've seen this happen when I used to live in Santa Cruz, California. The main power station there, they had an accident there, and it blew up or something. And we were without power for, I think, maybe, wasn't that long, maybe 5 or 6 days. And the markets there were just cleaned out. I mean, by the second day, they were pretty much cleaned out. And there was people fighting over candles and matches and just unbelievable what was going on. I just saw people screaming at each other, you know, why are you taking all the candles? You know, why are you being such a, you know, a hog? You know, it's just, just watching the way people reacted to it. And that was just a few short days of it going on. We were out 2 weeks up here because of a washout of the highway that took down the power lines and took the highway out. We couldn't get out for 2 weeks. And with me, it was nice. I rather enjoyed it. You know, I just lit a candle at night, or I went to bed when the sun went down and got up when the sun came up. And I had enough food stored, and we can cook with wood, and our water heated by propane. So we've got about a year of hot water, and we can cook off the propane too. You know, or wood, either way. So it really was no problem for us at all. And I rather enjoyed it because everything got real quiet, you know.
So it's a little bit different between mere survival mode and a mode of abundance and preparation. By the way, it's a lot easier to walk out with a handful of candles 2 days before that event happens.
Yeah, exactly. you know, without people climbing on your back, and I want one of those, you know. But, you know, it's just common sense, basically. I love what this friend of mine said, you know, the thing about common sense is not very common, you know. Said common sense is God sense. And I hear a lot of people, even at the conference, I thought it was quite interesting, because there was people saying, oh, no, there's not going to be any earth changes, and anybody that talks about this has not done their homework, and they're messed up, you know, and they're preaching fear and doom and gloom and everything else. And it's not prophecy anymore; it's science, you know. And if they're saying for years, everybody's saying there are no earth changes, well, they're here, you know. They're you know, everything's up 400%. The natural disasters, what's been going on, and it's escalating. And I don't know how they can make these statements now. And after channeling some being on the spiritual realms, I mean, they're most correct, because they probably aren't having these changes, you know, on their level. But if you're in a physical body and you want to cruise through this shift that we're going through, there is a lot of cleanup going to be going on every level, and we just need to go with the flow and make our own personal connection with spirit, whatever you want to call it, and act on that inner guidance, and everything will be fine.
Well, that's very good advice. Some people out there driving along the highway there in Phoenix, you know what we're talking about. Just that little premonition. Gee, maybe I should stuff a couple extra cans of beans in my groceries this week, or a 5-pound bag of rice. You'd be surprised how many nations have been built on rice. It makes a filler, and it's an easy food to fix. All you need, you don't even need hot water. You can just stick it in water for a few hours, and it's ready to eat.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, it's sad that how simple that is to take care of that. And, you know, how much do you love yourself and your physical body? It's not about fear. It's how much do you love yourself, and you love your family, and do you want to, you know, make sure everything's okay? And what better insurance? You know, these insurance policies aren't going to be useless, you know, if things really hit the fan. So why not, you know, make a little of your own insurance by, you know, buying a few bags of rice and beans and just have everything on hand just in case.
Exactly right. Good advice. My friend James Gilliland, his website is eCeti. That's ECETI.org. And they have little apartments up there. If you want to go up there and spend a weekend, James lives there. So I'm sure you guys would be happy to have a guest or two from time to time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we enjoy people coming up and having. We always tell people, you know, there's a lot of armchair investigators that throw stones at us and say none of this is real. And you know, but, you know, we say, you know, like Einstein said, condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. You know, so you know, come up and have your own experience, see the ships for yourself, as thousands have, you know, get your own film and your own pictures, and you'll go away with a whole new reality and a much more expanded awareness, which is pretty much happens almost every time whoever comes up here. They go back a changed person.
Well, we appreciate you, James. Thanks for putting on another great conference, the Earth Transformation Conference in Trout Lake, Washington. Thanks for coming on the program.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show, and anytime.
All right. Have a great week.
All right. Good night.
Uh-huh. All right. That's our good friend, James Gilliland. Again, his website is eCeti. That's ECETI, .org. And he's up in Trout Lake, Washington, about an hour and 40 minutes north of Portland. Very easy to get to across the river between Hood, Mount Hood and Mount Adams. Our phone numbers here at X Squared Radio, toll free 888-228-4494. And if you're anywhere else on planet, or off planet for that matter, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can get to us by dialing 530-776-5154. And we'll even take calls on Skype. You just simply put in BBS Radio. We are coming to you live through the BBS Radio Network, rebroadcasted on the Conscious Media Network, and we are live in the Phoenix market, KFNX 1100, 50,000 watts. We're glad that you're tuning in and getting squared. We'll have a network break in about 40 seconds. What we normally like to do is ease out a little bit with some peaceful music, and we will be back right after these messages. Don't go away, people. We'll come back with more X Squared Radio after this. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of the Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared.
Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio.
This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
Useful for you so we can make the transition through our network commercials. This is X Squared Radio. coming to you live from western Idaho. The temperature's now down to about 160 degrees, it seems, outside. You can still fry an egg on the roof. Beautiful weather here. The stars should be out very nicely. By the way, Mars is going to make a very close pass to Earth in August of this year. Right now, at night, all the way up until very, very early in the morning, Mars is still over the limb of the Earth. So it's very difficult to see if you live in North America, unless you could see through the ground. But in August, Mars is going to start rising and be visible in the late evening, 11, 12, 1 in the morning. And this is the closest that it's going to be for about, 2,000 years or so. No one alive is ever going to see Mars this close again. I would recommend going out and picking up a small telescope or a set of binoculars or even a digital camera that has the ability of a zoom, because you're going to be able to get some pictures of this planet through just a simple regular refracting telescope that are really going to bring this this world into view. You'll be able to see the polar caps. You'll be able to see wind storms if they're present on the planet. It might be a good idea just to have around, put in your own personal scrapbook. X Squared Radio coming to you live from western Idaho. Our phone number's toll-free, if you're out there, 888-228-4494. And anywhere else on planet or off planet, if you want to reach us, you can do so at 530-776-5154. Happy to have you as part of the program if you want to call in. This is the second hour of X Squared Radio, and if you're driving along the highway there in Phoenix and can safely do so, you can definitely reach us by cell phone. Again, that number is 530-776-5154. Next week on the program, we have the author of The God Theory. This is Dr. Bernard Haich. He is a physicist. And you're going to learn about the universe's zero-point fields and what's behind it all. I can tell you, if you're interested in learning about the zero-point field from someone with the scientific and metaphysical credentials, you need go no further than this author. If you want to put your metaphysical conception of the universe on a more solid scientific basis and have great discussions, get a little God theory in your life. This is the book next week. The author is coming on the program 3 hours here at X Squared Radio. The week after that, the final week of the month, the 26th of July, we have back on the program Donald Schmidt. Now, he is the co-author with Thomas Carey of the book called Witness to Roswell. Believe it or not, they've got a new edition coming out. This book unmasks the government's biggest cover-up ever. These guys know more about the Roswell crash than any two guys alive, and they've got more evidence since the last time we had them on the program last year. And there's even been some hard evidence fall into their hands. We're going to talk about it on the 26th. We will continue to bring you the highest quality, leading-edge experts from around the world here on X Squared Radio, and they're going to be interviewed not in the hot seat, so to speak, because in here the results are always positive, hence the formula X squared. But we go well past the imagination of most people, and we have a way of asking questions that are sound enough scientifically and reach far enough out there on the fringe of known science as to spark the imagination. And as Einstein said, intelligence is not as important as imagination. They kind of go together. One leads the other. Who knows which one? I know a lot of people with imagination and no intelligence, but I know more people with intelligence and no imagination. They're not good to invite to the party. Here at the second hour, we're going to discover bits of pottery discovered in a cave in southern China. Might be evidence of the earliest development of ceramics by ancient people, so they say. The find in Yuchanyan Cave dates to as much as 18,000 years ago. Did you get that? 18,000 years ago, pottery. Researchers report in Tuesday's edition of Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. This sets the Yuchanyan as the earliest site where pottery has been made. So far, I can tell you that the oldest civilizations in the world were quite advanced compared to what we might think they would be if they were actually new civilizations here on this earth. And we have a tendency to find their pottery, we find their, sometimes their artwork and their tools. We make our own assumptions about their level of technology because they digged in the soil or they were able to smelt bronze or they were able to hammer out simple copper tools. But there are some engineering marvels out there that stun even modern civil engineers, mechanical engineers, even electrical engineers. How in the world they were able to generate electricity 7,000 years ago and store it in a battery that maintained its charge until it was discovered in the 1940s is a little beyond modern science's imagination. The truth is that there are civilizations buried beneath the sands of Egypt and Saudi Arabia in the Sahara to this day. The Giza Pyramid and the Sphinx are just the tip of the mountain of evidence that advanced peoples lived here and thrived here thousands of years before the first Egyptians were born. If you've ever been there and held it in your hands, sifted the sand between your fingers, held the blocks, walked the caves, hiked the hills, you will see such a vast difference in workmanship, in engineering, in thought processes, and in alignment, that it boggles the mind. Now, it's okay to be a tourist and walk around in the heat, or if you go there in the winter in the reasonable weather of the Sahara or the upper Nile River, but it's another to sit back on a rock and look at it and say, gee, I wonder how they moved that 18-ton block 300 miles, got it here, lifted it into position, and settled it into place. That's enough of a question to consider how 1.4 million blocks were ostensibly moved upstream up the Nile to the location and then moved from where the canal was to where the pyramid was and put into place. It's quite another to realize that there was no standard system of measurement. That's right. There was no way to transfer a measurement from the pyramid downstream to the quarry in Aswan, cut the stone to exact dimensions, move the stone to a barge, move that barge upstream 300 miles to where the pyramid is, offload it, and set it in the right position and have it fit so tightly that you cannot fit a piece of paper between the stones. Take it even further. How about the 25 to 30 ton black granite blocks? They weren't quarried in the Aswan area. No, no. They were quarried 1,000 miles away. Cut and faced so precisely that when they arrived and were lifted into place, some 250 feet off the ground, they fit so perfectly that air does not leak between the stones. They fit so neatly in place that they form one continuous face across which you can rub your hand from stone to stone and you can barely feel the seam between them. We don't even make tombstones out of polished granite that are that precise. We do make granite tables for measurement that are flat within 25 millionths of an inch. But I dare say we pride ourselves in our modern technology, and we compare that technology to the somewhat primitive technology that we see displayed around the planet, and we come up wanting. We come up wanting. There is evidence that not only were there advanced civilizations that lived here on the Earth, but they applied that advanced engineering in such a way as to align the Giza pyramids so that they made out the pattern of the Orion star system. And the Great Pyramid has a vent, a viewing vent in it, that has been aligned with the star Sirius for over 11,000 years. It hasn't moved, even to this day. Now, I don't know if you know anything about the movement of planets and stars, but that would indicate that Sirius and our sun are in orbit around each other, a binary star system. If you want to learn more about that, you can go listen to Walter Crittenden's interview and his book, The Lost Star. Add to that the great civilizations built in the Yucatan by extremely advanced engineers. Their roads are still straight after 3,000 years. Their stellar calculations are exact, although there was no standard measurement system that we know of in those days. Our archaeologists are more fascinated with their pottery and their skeletons than they are with their knowledge of the stars. Some of this knowledge is not possible to know unless you have been off-planet. I don't know if you understand the importance of that. Either they had teachers who came from other worlds, stood before them and taught them about their own solar system and its movement through the cosmos, because the average lifespan in those days was certainly not any longer than it is now, and our lifespans are not long enough to consider the movement of stars through the heavens, not without extreme extrapolations in both directions using advanced digital imagery and computers. Lifetimes were simply not long enough to precisely locate a star and watch it over a series of lifetimes to predict and calculate their exact calendar actually ending on December 21st, 2012. Some say December 23rd, 2012. More in the 21st camp than in the 23rd camp. And if you want to learn more about that, you really want to come up to date, and you want to gain access to information from dozens and dozens of ancient publications and comparatively read it with modern science woven through it, there is a trilogy out there. It's called The Ark of Millions of Years. That's A-R-K, like Noah's Ark. In fact, the ancient record says that's what Noah called his ark, The Ark of Millions of Years. There is a trilogy, over 1,500 pages, carefully written so that you can understand it. More than 400 photographs, most of it original. You can get it by going to the website, arcofmillionsofyears.com. Arcofmillionsofyears.com. And check out the books. Now, the trilogy is kind of unique in that you can buy it as a trilogy set, or you can buy the books separately. And when you buy the books, you will receive the audio versions of Volume 1 and Volume 2 free. That's right. The links are sent directly to you, and you can download the first two books in audio. So if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. We read it for you. But you will have in your hands what many are calling the best evidence of the origin and destiny of the Earth you could possibly carry in your hands. Some universities are using them as textbooks now, but they are readable by you and much more affordable than a textbook, I can tell you that. There is evidence in the ceiling of Abydos. I don't know if you know where Abydos is. It's near Nag Hammadi in Egypt. If you want to go there, you'll have to join a little caravan of buses, and you'll have to travel with sometimes military escort, or at least checkpoints, but you can get there. And if you search the ceiling carefully enough, you'll find out that the ancients had and knew how to utilize flying machines. Now, these weren't predictions that we would be flying in our day. These craft came with operating instructions, power source descriptions, and the typical applications for these craft. Some could lift extremely heavy objects like granite blocks, some could carry small armies of people, and some could even travel in space. The carvings are there. The record is there. All you have to do is open your eyes, and you will realize that there have been advanced civilizations on this planet long before us. We think we're the only ones that figured out how to advance from rubbing two sticks together to make fire. Don't listen to it. Don't listen to it. A lot more advanced civilizations out there than that. And they had many things figured out. They had figured out how to travel this planet as easily as we do. They had figured out how to live in peace. And for a long, long time, several millennia, might have even figured out how to live in harmony with the planet, which, by and large, we're having a hard time doing these days. On small scales, we're doing it. Although there are some architects out there that are designing green cities. What do I mean by green cities? I mean cities that have employment inside the city, farms on the outside of the city, and the city becomes almost self-supporting. Yes, you have to export and import some things, but it isn't like you have to have freeways jammed with people to get into and out of the city to find work. Those traffic jams go away. Because instead of spending 40 to 60% of the project budget on infrastructure, that's roads and parking structures, they get to spend much more of the money on the actual quality of life in the cities. And these cities are being designed as we speak. Who's building them? Well, I dare say that countries like China, France, Germany, Norway, they're ahead of us. They're ahead of us. In many respects, they are recycling their waste. One by one, they're taking nuclear power plants offline because they figured out how to make fuel using vegetables and seeds and sunlight and wind. We're getting there. We're catching up, but they're ahead of us. We have to rethink the way we power our nation. I know you didn't learn that in your classrooms, did you? Well, we discussed these topics with the most advanced specialists in the world right here on this program. We talk about alternative energy. We're involved in the production of biodiesel, in algae for biodiesel, in electric vehicles, plug-in electric vehicles, plug-in hybrids. You can check us out, xsquaredradio.com. Don't forget to follow the links to our affiliates like Phoenix Science Foundation. And we want you to pay particular attention, those of you in the Phoenix market and those of you around the United States, Canada, and Mexico that are listening tonight. There's a new company in town. It's called Global Green Cars. I say new. They're not really new because in 1993, they got into the electric vehicle business. And in 1995, the federal government had a contest called EV America. They decided to gather up and test the best electric vehicles in production. So they sent out an invitation to all the car builders. I think at that time there were 56 major car makers in the United States. All of them answered, of course we'll deliver an electric vehicle. Now it could be that they were sensing a big government giveaway, but the giveaway never happened because they came back out. The government, and they refined their announcement. Yes, we want you to bring your electric vehicle to our contest, but there's no money, and by the way, you have 6 months. Well, all but three companies dropped out. Three companies. Chrysler, a company called Solectria, and another company called Bat International, which was also doing business as Global Green Cars. They were buying Chevrolet Geo Metros, and they were buying Ford Ranger pickup trucks directly from dealers, pulling the gasoline parts out, putting electric parts in, and selling those vehicles. Ford and General Motors were honoring the new car warranties. People were buying the vehicles and are still driving them today. The EV America contest was held. Needless to say, Global Green Cars took all the awards. Hill climbing, acceleration, braking, distance on a charge, and a car passed crash test in 1995. Then in 1998, a strange thing happened. The state of California ended their electric vehicle mandates. That effectively killed the market for electric vehicles because gasoline was selling for $1.05 a gallon. No one was interested in electric vehicles. The state of California started out to be interested because they have 6- and 7- and 8-lane wide traffic jams every single morning filled with thousands, millions and millions of cars sitting there idling, moving along at 15 miles an hour, 5 days a week, 5 mornings and 5 evenings, every single weekday. And they wanted to do something about it from a pollution standpoint. Global Green Cars met the challenge. They were the largest producer of electric vehicles in the United States until 1998. In 2009, fuel prices are back up, the demand is back up, and the federal government appears to be interested once more in the production of electric vehicles. Global Green Cars is now launching the first mass production electric vehicle, plug-in electric vehicle in the United States. I'm not taking anything away from the people out there that have made 5 cars or even 600 cars. Every major car maker has announced they're back in the electric car business. But it was Global Green Cars in April of this year that announced they are going ahead, full speed ahead, with mass production. So you will be able to access electric vehicles at your dealership. These cars, just simply plug them into a 110-volt socket and drive the car. There's no special training, no special abilities. The cars will drive further than you drive to work every day, and they don't use a drop of fuel. You fill them up for pennies a day, and your electricity prices don't fluctuate like your fuel prices. Put hundreds of dollars back in your pocket. You want to find out more? They have a website, globalgreencars.com, or you can just go to ggci-us.com and learn more for yourself. Global Green Cars. We also want to pay close attention as we're talking about earth changes, ancient civilizations. What did they know and what happened to them? One of the things that you gather when you walk up against Giza, by the way, let me see a show of hands of those people that have seen the new Transformers movie. Ah, pretty good. I like it. I know. I see you over there. You're saying the critics don't know what they're talking about. I agree with you. I thought the movie was very good. A lot of action, a lot of drama. Sometimes you wanted to laugh, sometimes you wanted to cry. But it was the setting that was pretty amazing, that they tied this into the Giza Pyramid. Now, honestly, I don't know how they're going to rebuild the pyramid after they tore it up for that movie. Oh, I see. They did it with special effects. They didn't really hurt the pyramid. Okay. Well, that's good. That's good, because I have pictures of it, and I kind of like the way it was before. But the point is that if there was an ancient civilization, and they built such an edifice, such an instrument, shall we call it, that was aligned with the star Sirius, so close, like within 1 degree. Do you know how hard it is to align something on this planet within 1 degree of a distant star without a theodolite? A theodolite is a very high magnification transit that's very sensitive to a fraction of an arc second. Yeah. And the curvature of the edges of the pyramid matches the curvature of the Earth. Now, that's pretty hard to measure as well. Somewhere along the line, some engineer sat down and designed this thing. That sounds challenging enough. But when you consider how long it ostensibly took them to build the quarry and build this pyramid, you see that the project was handed off from engineer to engineer, almost from generation to generation, until it came to fruition. I can tell you, in our modern day, a project is handed off from one engineer to another, it's going to change. The dimensions are going to change. One engineer is going to come in smarter than another one, a little more ego than another one, and it's going to change. The pyramid, the Giza pyramid, never changed from start to finish. It was a perfect alignment of multiple sacred geometries. And when it was capped with its crystal capstone and the sun hit it, guess what it drew on the ground around the temple as the sun went over? Guess what it drew on the ground around that pyramid? It drew the shapes of the Hebrew alphabet. That's right. As the sun struck the crystal on the top of the pyramid, the distortion of those fields inside that crystal, the prismatic shapes that showed up on the ground, were the shapes that make up the Hebrew alphabet. Now you know where it came from. And we learned that here from one of our guests, Robert Balval, knows more about the pyramids than almost any man alive. If you missed the archive, it's no problem. You can access it at X Squared Radio and listen for yourself. We are live in Phoenix, 1100 KFNX AM, 50,000 watts, to bring you the truth so you can awaken. It's time you learned where the human race came from. During the next half an hour, if you're driving around Phoenix and you're listening on KFNX 1100, 50,000 watts of informative radio energy blasting out around the Phoenix area. This is X Squared Radio. I'm Brooks Agnew, your host. We have been broadcasting around the world since September of 2005, and now you have joined us for one of the premier scientific talk radio programs around the world. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth here with some of the best guests from around the world. There are over 400 hours of archives stored on our server, and you can access them all for $20 a year. You can listen until you can't listen anymore. The best authorities, the best cosmologists, the best astronomers, the best biologists, and the best physicists come on this program to discuss their theories and the very leading edge of space. If you want to know about the rovers on Mars, come here. If you want to know about the current atmospheric conditions on Mars, come here. If you want to learn about the depths of the ocean or the structure of the Earth, this is the place to find out about it. Our first caller today was Dan from Florida. He called in about 5:30, and he asked a question about the expedition. On this program, we affectionately call it the expedition, but if you've never heard of it before, its formal title is the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. Some of you may have heard of it. It is, by all accounts, the greatest expedition in the history of the world. In 2006, a section of ice broke off of the Arctic Circle. It exposed a section of the ocean that has not been seen by humans ever. Scientists believe the area has been covered by at least 8 meters of ice for more than 200,000 years. Now it's open ocean. We'll talk about the causes and reasons of why it's open later. But for now, We want you to realize that there is an area of our planet that hitherto has never been seen by human eyes. One man, in 1926, flew over it in an airplane at 2,500 feet altitude, which is why he's an aviation hero instead of a statistic. His name was Admiral Byrd. He brought back an oral record that as he was flying across the frozen ice above the Arctic Circle, he suddenly flew into a lush green tropical area with flowing water, green grass, trees, and he could even see large animals below. None should have been there. He flew over it, and he flew back, and he gave his account. He repeated his flights over the South Pole in 1929. We have tried repeatedly to charter aircraft and make the same flight. It cannot happen. No one will fly over this area below 17,000 feet. We have tried to get space photography of this area. We have looked at over 30,000 images of this area, all of them overcast. You cannot see the ocean in this area from space, at least in the visible band. We have one photograph that's an X-ray photograph, and it does in fact show an opening in the crust. Legend has it that there is an opening to the inner Earth somewhere in the Arctic region. The trouble is, there's no evidence. Oh, I don't mean that people have gone there and brought back nothing. I mean no one's gone there. So as scientists, we could not sit on the sidelines any longer, and we decided to mount an expedition. It is called the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. This is a sea-based voyage, taking one of two ships, the only two ships on the Earth that are civilian capable of making this expedition. They must be icebreakers. One is nuclear-powered, and the other does carry enough fuel to be able to make it there and back and stay a considerable time. There are no civilian ships, there are no civilian ships other than these two that can make this journey. The ship holds 100 passengers and has a crew of 150. It's 450 feet long, weighs 23,000 tons, has 75,000 horsepower. These are the roughest, most turbulent seas on the planet. It is not a pleasure cruise. There will be injuries, there will be danger, and there will also be cameras. We're taking film crews, we're taking scientists, we'll be sampling water, microbes, magnetism, air samples, we'll be taking aurora borealis measurements, we'll be taking samples off the sea bottom, the sea floor, 4,400 meters down, has never been seen before by human eyes. We will be photographing under the water, above the water, invisible light, in infrared light. In 15 days, we'll gather more information about the structure of our planet than has ever been gathered before. And we pledge that we will bring it back. And we will produce the films, feature films, specials. Discovery Channel, History Channel, National Geographic Channel have all expressed high interest in airing the films, although they do not want to be involved in the expedition on the front end. Yes, we are looking for financial support. It will come. Everest has been climbed and filmed more than 100 times. This has never been done. We cannot go to the moon. There is no way we can make it to Mars. But we can do this. This we can do. And if you're excited about that, and you want to participate in some way, you want to be a passenger, you want to be a filmmaker, you want to be a writer, you want to be a participating scientist, and even more importantly, if you want to financially involve yourself in this, you can find out more by going to phoenixsciencefoundation.org. click on the APEX link. That stands for Advanced Planetary Exploration. And it's a company set aside to conduct this very special and very unique, one-of-a-kind, once-only, greatest expedition in the history of the world, the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. Find out all you can. One of the other things that we talk about here is energy. Now, you get some energy shows out there. They talk about various generators and different ways of reducing waste and different ways of powering things. It all boils down to one thing called the zero point. And we do talk about that from time to time. We have a lot of different experts that come on and talk about the zero point. We know friends that have companies even called Zero Point Research. The fact is that there is a source of energy. There is a region of energy. There is a cosmological or dimensional region where energy leaks into our dimension. The best physicists in the world, even the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory in Hanford, Washington, which is headed up by Dr. Fred Robb, will tell you we do have energy blinking into our universe, into our dimension, from another dimension. Zero point is sort of like the receptacle where you drop your extension cord for your new energy device. Now, it doesn't mean that energy is being created out of nothing. It most certainly is not. But it is coming into the box from outside the box, and it's being tapped into and utilized. It's a very, very small amount of energy to begin with. But the evidence is mounting that there's enough energy to spare that could power everything we have. Off-grid, on-grid, you name it. Be looking for batteries to come out soon, not powerful enough to drive your car, but powerful enough to recharge the batteries that are in your car. Drive it for a while and park it, and it self-recharges. You're going to see it. You are going to see it. It is going to be produced very, very soon. We also talk about a subject called global warming. Now, good night. You've probably heard about this in the press so much you're tired of hearing about it. But there are two questions that keep coming up. Is it real? And will it last? Is it cyclic? Well, the facts are that it is real. But there's an additional point you should know. It isn't unique to the Earth. All the planets in the solar system are warming. Saturn's atmospheric pressure has gone up 30% in 18 years. Uranus is warming. Venus, Jupiter, all of them are warming. And all of them reflect more energy back out into space than they receive from our own sun. Very, very interesting anomalies. So if all the planets are warming, are they eventually going to cool off? Is this a cycle we're going through? Are we getting ready to jump into a sudden ice age the way some authors have recorded it? These global superstorms that we see almost forming, sometimes in the winter of the Northwest, sometimes in the winter of the Northeast, these gigantic multi-state hurricane-like formations that are almost complete, rotating counterclockwise, pulling in high-altitude cold air into a funnel that might reach the ground. Are you ready for 9 or 10 feet of snow? Are you ready for 70, 80, 85 below zero weather? That's how ice ages start, you know. We talk about it here on this program. Is fresh water running out? Are we going to be able to learn how to live within the parameters of our planet? Are we going to be able to learn how to use salt water, turn it into fresh water? Are we going to learn how to stop putting pollutants into our atmosphere? Are we going to have to continue to live near a coast and near rivers in order to survive? Are we going to continue to have to live on the grid of wires that are lacing our nation so that we can warm and cool our houses, pump our water, and work our electrical devices? If you look at this nation from space, what you see are areas of concentration, cities of light, networks like spider webs, like gray ribbons lined with white and red corpuscles flowing electronically through the lifeblood of our planet. But the vast majority of acreage you see from space is black because nobody lives there. An occasional house here and there, but there are millions and millions of square acres that are completely uninhabited in our nation. Because everyone is living within 20 miles of a coast or 20 miles of a major river. Those days are coming to an end. There is technology getting ready to be introduced to the general public that you can buy and that you can utilize that will disconnect you from that grid, that will begin to decentralize the energy supply of our nation. One of those methods is called alternative fuels, biological fuels, or shortened into biofuels. What does this mean? It means that you can take seeds and roots and agricultural scrap like corn stover, wheat straw, switchgrass, corn cobs. These are the kinds of things that can be turned into fuel now. The hulls from oat seeds. All kinds of things can be used to generate energy. And now, with the advent of a company that's been around for almost 15 years, a company called Green Star Products. If you want to check that out, you go to greenstarusa.com, check it out. They're actually turning algae into diesel fuel. Algae. That is solar energy. Sun beating on water, creating a microbe which has been around for billions of years, is able to produce a clean, high cetane, low sulfur, high omega oil that can be turned directly into diesel fuel, burned in your vehicles, pollution free. Talk about stabilizing your feedstock. Unfortunately, nobody in the United States is doing it on a commercial level. Not until now. Check it out, greenstarusa.com. Companies are out there. And we're going to give you a little challenge here in about 4.5 minutes. We'll see if you meet it. One of the other things we talk about here is peak oil. There are some facts and figures you need to know. You don't need to stop your car and write them down. I think you can remember them. But when you get home, I want you to discuss it with your family while you're driving around. Think about it. There has not been a major oil discovery since 1972. Little ones here and there, a billion barrels here and there. There has not been a major oil discovery since 1972. Fact number two. The United States uses about 25% of the world's oil turned into fuels and solvents and polymers. The United States only has 2% of the world's oil reserves. Those numbers won't work long, folks. Using 25%, 2% reserves, the numbers are in the wrong direction. Peak oil does exist. It will run out. It wasn't meant to last forever. It was meant to help us start an era. But now we know better. We know how to make those fuels through more natural means without drilling holes in the ground and certainly without fighting wars for it. But there's something we don't know how to do. there's something we haven't figured out. And all of our technology and all of our wisdom and our ability to communicate, our ability to pontificate and to put out video and to put out advertising and all kinds of persuasive rhetoric, there's one thing we haven't figured out how to do. We haven't figured out how to get capital, money, to those people and those companies that would bring us that technology. It's called access to capital. In this nation, as in many nations, we have relied upon our government officials to take care of that for us. We have relied upon them to provide money for startups in the form of underwriting, in the form of direct loans, in the form of grants, so that this alternative technology can come forth, factories can be built, and you can, at once and for all, stop digging up the planet and shoveling it into your gas tank and burning it. Come on, people. We no longer rub two sticks together to make fire, and we don't burn our planet. So how do we fix the access to capital? Because at the end of the day, governments don't run countries. The people run the country. The people make the money. The people are the source of the money. The people are the headwaters of all the funding of the government. And that means if you want to see it happen, you have got to separate out your money. And you have to pool it independently of the federal government, and you have to find these technologies and fund them individually, one by one, maybe groups of 25, maybe groups of 1,000 in a big city. You have got to come up with a way to self-tax yourself for the future. The government is figuring out a way to finance it with your great-grandchildren's income. It doesn't need to be that way. The technology is here right now. Right now. It can be put into vehicles. It can be put into power plants. It can be put into homes today. We're talking about hydrogen fuel cells. We're talking about algae for biodiesel. We're talking about batteries that recharge themselves. We're talking about technology that exists and will work. But it needs to get out of the development stage and get into the production stage, and that cannot happen on the inventor's income. It has to happen from a community effort, pulling together a little bit at a time, a dollar here, a dollar there, times 300 million people. Pretty soon you're talking about real money. That kind of capital is what it will take to make the energy revolution. That kind of capital is what it will take to establish energy independence once and for all. Who's in charge of making it happen? You are. So I suggest that you find a company. Go on the internet, open the phone book, talk to a friend, find a company that is doing research and development. And by development, I don't mean building a backyard anti-gravity lawnmower. Use some common sense, people. Look for the companies that are actually producing prototypes that need to get into production and invest in them. I don't care if it's $10. I don't care if it's 50 cents. Set up a lemonade stand and raise money for them. But get them some money so that we can break the grip that the energy cartels have on us. And the last thing that you can do is that you can look for a vehicle. You can look for a method of travel that doesn't use those fuels. Biodiesel delivers 3 times as much energy as it takes to make it. 3 times as much. Gasoline, not even close, people. This is the way to go. This is the future, because without it, there is no future. Unless you want to go back to hunting berries and gathering fruit. fruits off the ground as they fall from the tree, if there are any trees left. That's what we talk about on this program. This is X Squared Radio. We come to you live every Sunday between 5 and 8 p.m. Pacific Time. My name is Brooks Agnew. My career, science and engineering. I got hooked into broadcasting, and I enjoy speaking to you. If you want to call in, you can do so. Toll free, 888-228-4494. If you're on a cell phone and you're outside the United States, Mexico, Australia, Germany, China, it doesn't matter, on planet or off planet, you can reach us at 530-776-5154. We will be in the Phoenix market for the next 13 to 16 weeks. If all goes well, will become permanent. I can tell you this, you have my promise, whether you're driving across the country or whether you're listening to us on your workstation at work, we will be number one in the Phoenix market in 6 weeks. You have my word. This is a 3-hour program, so if you're not getting all 3 hours, you're going to be leaving us at 7 o'clock Pacific time. Call the station and tell them you'd like to have all 3 hours of X Squared Radio, because the final hour, people, is where we pull it all together. This is the one where we fasten our seatbelts, recline our seat back, look out the window, because we're going to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. This is where we go out into space, into the quantum levels. And we take you with us, and we explain it in such a way that you'll understand it. You'll be able to hold your own at the water cooler or with your engineering friends. In our next hour, we're going to talk about the L-Cross mission. Those of you that don't know what the L-Cross mission is, we have about 2.5 minutes in our second hour. I'm going to explain really quick the L-Cross mission. Put together by NASA, it is a probe that has been sent to the moon. It is set up to launch a 4,000-pound projectile into the south pole of the moon, creating a 5-mile diameter deep crater. The debris thrown into the air is going to be, or into the sky of the moon, is going to be spectrographically analyzed for metals, for H3, for water, for oxygen. I can tell you right now, the opinion of most scientists that I've talked to, this doesn't make sense from a lot of points of view. We're capable of better. If you want to find out more, you're going to have to tune in at either bbsradio.com or xsquaredradio.com. If you're driving around Phoenix right now, you got about 3 minutes to get to an internet connection and dial us up. xsquaredradio.com, you can listen live for free. bbsradio.com, you can listen live for free. Free radio, free press, for a free mind. If you want to get this third hour in the KFNX 1100 Phoenix market, 50,000 watts strong, where you can tune in and get squared, then you're going to have to call the affiliate at KFNX in Phoenix. Tell them you want the third hour of X Squared Radio. The other thing we're going to talk about is hollow moon theory. Yes, hollow moon theory. Believe it or not, we discovered the moon was hollow in 1969. We're also going to play some clips for you from an interview with Andy Basciago. In fact, I'm going to play one right now. I'm not capable of doing it right this moment, but I will. That clip is going to reveal to you that our government has been involved in research that is going to blow your mind. That's right. Would you believe the technology of Nikola Tesla was recovered? His papers were not lost. They were recovered, and the devices were built, and they were tested. And we're going to share the results in our next hour on X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from Western Idaho. It's just about sundown. According to our AccuWindow forecast, it's only 135 degrees outside and cooling down fast. By the way, if you want to get your binoculars out, be sure to go to heavens-above.com. Find out when the International Space Station is coming over your neighborhood, because Space Shuttle Endeavour is going to be connected to it, and it's going to be even brighter than it has been the last week. And it's going to be quite spectacular. If you've never seen it overhead, it's because you haven't looked up, because there's a lot going on over your head when that thing goes over. It's so bright, you're going to be amazed that you never looked up and saw it before. It's quite amazing. We'll be back after these messages. We're going to break for our network affiliates with KFNX, and then we'll be back. Don't go away, my friends, because we have a lot of great stuff to talk about in our next hour here on X Squared Radio.
Friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TBT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TBT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer.
There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today.
If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio
and get your copy on order today.
This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
Andy Basciago was on our program the July 4th weekend. He was on for 1 hour. We also interviewed him on behalf of James Gilliland on his program, As You Wish Radio. And it was just stunning, absolutely stunning material. I wish that you could hear it. We're going to figure out this technical difficulty. I don't know if something's wrong with my mixer or what. But the other one was an interview with Dr. Gary Schwartz, where we were talking about chaos theory. And the interesting thing about chaos, you know, when we talk about entropy, it's one of the laws of thermodynamics that things will always go from more complex to less complex. They will decay, so to speak, in given enough time. But when you look at situations that are chaotic in the universe already, like, say, a big dust cloud or the aftermath of a giant explosion, what you see is that order begins to fall out of chaos. That's exactly right. And I'm going to explain this to you in a way that will make sense to you. When you have white noise in a room, you have all kinds of noises happening at the same time. Some of those noises will cancel each other out. We call this noise cancellation. We also call it destructive interference, where one frequency matches another frequency, but it's slightly out of phase with that frequency, and so it diminishes the power that actually remains behind. On the other hand, sometimes frequencies match up. They're the right harmonic, or they're even equal frequency, and they're the right phase. And what happens is those noises have a tendency to get louder. They get brighter. They get shinier. They put out more energy. So in essence, what we have in a system of absolute chaos and disorder, sure enough, we have order popping out. We actually have observations in space where things are going from the maximum entropy state, that is to say, the highest level of decay, the lowest energy state, and levels of order are coming out of it. Now, there are two authors that dealt with this. One was Dr. Gary Schwartz in his book called The God Experiment. And this is a very scientific experiment, scientific method. The methodology was very, very good. And he brought back evidence that there was intelligence in the universe, and it did respond to the intelligence of the individual. And the other book is this book we're going to discuss next week, called The God Theory by Bernard Haich. Now, this is a different standpoint. Instead of the psychoanalyst and the statistician looking at the evidence, we now have a physicist and metaphysicist looking at the evidence, and you're going to see that out of the void, so to speak, we are actually having leadership. We're actually having intelligent, organized systems pop out of this chaos. Now, does that mean that you can put all the working parts of a 23-jewel wristwatch in a shoebox and shake up the shoebox and eventually it will come out as a wristwatch on time, already wound up? The probabilities are against it. In other words, it's never going to happen. If I take an egg that I've dropped on the floor, scoop it up, put it into a box or a jar and shake it up, do you think it'll ever reconstitute itself as a chicken egg? Not likely. In fact, the odds are against it. It's never going to happen. But does that mean that I can't take a room full of dust and play music in it and have the dust fall on the floor in a specific pattern? Maybe. But, of course, now I've inputted the music and made it more complex. I put intelligent energy into the area. And hence I have order beginning to come out of it. Why is this important? It's important because as you go through your life, you think that everything is chaotic, nothing's working for you, I have no control over anything, I pray to the gods and nothing happens, or I pray to my God or his God or her God, and I'm still in the same situation I was in, I haven't won the lottery, I don't have a better job, if any job at all, I haven't got the things that I want. That's because this idea of resonance, this idea of constructive interference is exactly the physical principle that you need to be applying. And you can do it with consciousness. And we're going to cover that in great detail in the coming weeks. I also want to talk about time travel, because we discussed this with Andy Basiago. The thing about Andy's experience, he started in the program as a 7-year-old. Excuse me while I drink a little bit of water. I know real hosts are not supposed to drink water, but I'm mortal sometimes. So it appears that there were two technologies. One was called a chronovisor, and the other one was the teleporter. Now, the chronovisor actually allowed them to do two things. One, on a flat screen, you could look into the distant past or future. And the second is it would produce a hologram into which a young person, a short young person, could stand and view the hologram from inside the hologram and could witness historical or future events and could bring back knowledge which would help. Now, fortunately, the ones that conducted this project called Project Pegasus had some self-control, and they didn't go about changing future events. And better, they didn't go back in the past and change events and change the future. They realized that as they change either one of those sets of information, they change all subsequent measurements. So in order to build a database, in order to build something that's useful, that's navigable, that's knowledgeable, you've got to leave your database alone. You can't just keep changing it. You remember the movie Butterfly Effect. Every time you changed one thing, everything else in the future changed as well. Things that were not in his control. And with enough trial and error, it's possible he could have found the right way to manipulate the future where everything would be okay. And there were probably several versions that were okay. But the writer and director chose not to let any of those happen during his production, so we didn't see it. The question that I want to ask you, and then I want you to bring the answer back to me by calling in, I want to know if you think the federal government has continued to exercise self-restraint in using this equipment and this technology by not manipulating the future, by not going back and changing the past. And I also want to know from you if you think the government has stopped using it. Now, keep in mind that this equipment was put together in the 60s. This is tube technology. You know, vacuum tube. Some of you may never have seen a vacuum tube before. Televisions used to be full of them. Now they're flat screen. And they're full of microchips. When I was a kid, 10 years old, I went to the rear of our defunct color TV, took the back off the TV, pulled all the tubes out, put them into a box, put them on my bicycle, rode them up to the electronics store, put all the tubes in their tube tester, found the ones that were bad, bought the ones that were bad, brought all the tubes back, put them all back in the TV, put the back on the TV, plugged it in, turned it on, and it worked. Beautiful color, no vertical roll, everything was great. My family thought I was a genius, and I was. But these days, computers are flat screen, made of flexible circuit boards in the back with integrated circuits painted on them, solder technology, surface mount technology. And they're very difficult to troubleshoot. When they go bad, you just throw them away and get another one, even though TVs are a lot more expensive now than they were back then. My question is, with the advent of this advanced technology with computers and with integrated circuits and flexible circuit boards and surface mount technology and custom microcircuitry, do you think that the government stopped using it? Or do you think they refined it and they made it even better, smarter, more powerful, more dangerous? Give us a call, toll free, 888-228-4494. Or if you've got free nights and weekends and you can reach out with that cell phone, you can get to a cell phone tower somewhere on planet or off planet, you can reach us at 530-776-5154. Call in, be part of the program, save my voice a little bit. Let's talk about it. You heard Andy Basciago's interview here on this program. He was on for 1 hour. We're going to have him on for 3 hours as soon as he finishes his book. In fact, get this. This is the first program that Andy is going to come on when he finishes his book. This is a book that they will make a movie of before the ink dries on the paper. Absolutely amazing. So, if you'll give us a call, and we'll talk about it, or you can reach us on Skype, by the way, by going to BBS Radio. Give us a call, we'll talk about it. Time travel, teleportation, we had the technology, and it could be interesting to see if they're still messing with it. Of course, how would we ever know if they're manipulating time? Does our reality and our future change at the same time that they're changing the future? I think so. But it's certainly a paradox. It's a paradox that physicists have wrestled with for a long, long time. We think about the arrow of time, but really time doesn't move like that. If there is a now in the universe, we physicists haven't figured out how fast it flows. What we can do is step outside the universe and say that the net charge or the net time or the net distance in the universe is zero. But inside the universe, those things are immeasurable because we just don't have a frame of reference. The whole universe is now, which means you can see into the future and the past equally and bring it to the point where you stand. The rather interesting paradox is that humans have a tendency to believe that they, and only they, are standing at the zero point on that timeline. I saw a very interesting sign the other day as I was driving down the freeway, a sign on the side of the road that said, "When you die, where will you spend eternity?" And I had the craziest thought. That's weird. I thought eternity already started. When did it start? Did I miss it? The fact is, people, we are in the middle of it. Eternity doesn't start when you die. It started a long time ago. It started without you. And so if you want to be part of what's going on, you want to be part of the energy, you want to be a sovereign being, you have to realize that you are in control of that timeline. You are in control of that timeline. And you are accessible to the future and to the past. As you view the future, you can bring that information home to the past, which is the present, where you are now. And you can choose to take your biological transducer down different future paths. But you only get one at a time with the physical body. Your mind, your imagination can jump ahead, can look at all kinds of different scenarios, and you can even experience them. You can practice them. Practice the shot. Practice the jump. Practice the construction. Practice the test. And you can bring that information home to the past. And you can bring the feelings that you had when that was going on. You can bring the lessons that you learned, the mistakes that you made in the future, back to the past, which is now. And you can walk forward with wisdom unmatched. Now, you'll remember a few moments ago I was talking to you that the universe is in this state of chaos in a lot of respects, and that when it's in this chaos, when it's exposed to organizing energy, or left on its own, it will spontaneously begin to organize to a certain extent. That doesn't mean that a 23-jewel watch will reassemble. No. But certain things will begin to interfere with certain things in a constructive way, and things will begin to form. What you want to do as you access this future is figure out how to make those things form. Is to resonate so well with the future, with your energy. And by the way, people do this negatively and positively. They actually influence their futures negatively. Oh, this is never going to happen. Oh, that person's going to rip me off in the end. You watch and see. Oh, everything is going to go you know where in a handbasket. And guess what? It does. Does that mean you predicted it, or does that mean you made it? Let's find out. Tony from Alberta, you're on line one. Welcome to the program.
Oh.
How are you?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm doing great.
You know, I listened to Andrew last week. I think it was last weekend, wasn't it?
That's right.
I was just amazed what he said. How credible is Andrew? That's the thing I was wondering, because what he said were just unbelievable.
You know, it really was, and I had that same question myself, but I've got to tell you, he was on the program for an hour, but I spoke to him for 7 hours, and he did not miss a beat. He knew every fact, every detail. He had witnesses. He had corroborative evidence. He had dates and times and places, and everything matched. I'm having a hard time discounting it, Tony.
Wow. You know, because I thought, you know, man, I've got to talk to Brooks about this, because this was just unbelievable. I mean, I was just blown away, you know, that we have teleportation and all this stuff. You know, you see this stuff on Star Trek and all that, you know, and what he said was just something else.
Well, actually, he said the Star Trek method of teleportation would kill you. You can't scatter your electrons and protons and everything around the universe and reassemble them. He said you actually go through the teleportation device whole, just like Stargate SG-1. He said, in fact, the government uses science fiction and feeds this to the science fiction community so that the disinformation can get out there, so that if somebody says, oh, yeah, Andy, he was doing the teleportation on Project Pegasus, and somebody says, oh yeah, you just saw that on Stargate SG-1.
Oh.
Pretty smart, huh?
So this government that we have now, do they know about this?
Well, as it turns out, they do. He has interviewed CIA agents, and he has interviewed government officials that still work for the government, and they do remember Project Pegasus, and they do remember he was involved as a 7-year-old.
So could you track him where he lives now, or?
Well, you know, I believe you could, but now he is working on his book, and I know there's going to be a lot more evidence in the book, and I'm sure it's going to be a firestorm when it comes out. We were just happy to have him on the program. I just met him up at James Gilliland's. Actually, I met him in 2006, and he was working on it. But here it is 2009, and it's greatly refined. He spent a lot of time and a lot of money going back and researching all these old contacts.
So he knows the future then? He knows what's going to happen in 2012? I know he said something about 2013, that New York was underwater.
Yeah, actually, it was the capital. Is Washington, D.C. was 100 feet under brackish water, which makes complete
New York
sense.
Didn't he say New York was underwater, too, I thought, in his interview?
Well, we were talking about New York, but that was in respect to a giant tidal wave that might be sitting up there in Greenland.
Right, right.
But
so is that really the result of 2012, then? Basically, what he said at 20, when he said what he said on 2013.
Well, that's what I gather, is that's exactly what we're expecting to see, is that these Earth cataclysms are going to affect the coastlines, and they're going to be devastating.
Is that basically, I remember your theory about the black hole, you know, in the in space there, and you said that the Earth was going to kind of go through, because, you know, I got your books, all three of your books, and read them, and, you know, and was that basically your theory, too, what he was talking with? Did you kind of agree with him where he was coming from?
It does seem that the two theories did mix together. Actually, what I did is I took the theory from Mayan records and then added modern physics to it to see how it could happen, if it was plausible. And it turns out that it is.
Wow. That's unreal. So what I think is that the government has improved on this. That's my theory. That, you know, they just haven't let this die. There's no way they've let this die. If anything,
so you're one in the camp that believes the government just couldn't leave it alone, that they're still experimenting.
Oh, I'm sure they're experimenting. And, you know, and first of all, I don't trust the government, you know, too much. Because, you know, they don't tell us the truth to start with. And, but the trouble is we don't know who the government is. That's one of the big problems. You know, they talk about these black ops governments, these shadow governments. I mean, there's so many theories out there. I mean, you just, you know, you're lost after a while, you know, but yeah, I think that they, and I wouldn't put it past them if they wouldn't try to manipulate the future. No.
Well, I don't know that they would, like you said, that they would do the real big things, big events like changing 9/11 or something like that, because all future events after that would skew their database. But
well, that's right.
You know,
yeah.
I can tell you, if they had a view of the future and Osama bin Laden or some Hitler guy came up and nuked something, I can't help but think that they would just, you know, slide back in the past a little bit and have him have an accident.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, there are some shows on TV, okay, where they go into the past and they go into the future. You know, they have a certain guy that goes there and he gets rid of somebody, or he changes something that doesn't happen, or this, you know, or somebody's on, you know, that's doing something that's really bad, and I know there's a program like that. I've seen it, you know, and now this is just like, you know, this is like a real thing now we're talking, you know. We're not talking science fiction here anymore, you know. I mean, if this guy, like, if you said you interviewed him for 7 hours, you know, and I thought, wow, how come Brooks only interviewed this guy for an hour? I thought this guy was just, you know, I couldn't.
Well,
you know,
that's all the time we had. And seriously, you know, when you're up there at the conference, you want to interview as many guests as possible.
Right.
We'd love to have him on for 3 hours, but I'm telling you, if I told you the stuff that he told me on the radio, I don't know what people would do. I'm going to wait till the book comes out.
Well, that's true. I mean, there'd be some people that would. Well, some people just think he's crazy or something. They wouldn't believe it. I know, you know, I talk to certain people about different things, like UFOs and different things like that. And I have, you know, since I've been a little boy, I've always thought that this stuff was around. I always thought there was aliens around, you know. And now I'm a senior. And I haven't changed. My thoughts haven't changed. Even though when I was 18, 10 years old, I used to read about, you know, the International Space Station they're going to build and things like that. And now they're there. This was just, I couldn't believe it. So, what are your thoughts, though, on the whole thing?
Well, I mean, on 2012 or on time travel?
Well, time travel, yeah.
Well, I think time viewing is possible. I strongly believe that because I know the mathematical strength behind it is absolutely sound. The idea that the entire universe is in some level of now makes perfect mathematical sense, you know, to us. And I don't have a problem with it at all. The idea that a human can actually, you know, make that contact and bring it back intact, and then, of course, I realize that the observation effect has an effect on that future. So, in a sense, you know, time viewing is certainly possible. And if we take enough of our feelings, enough of our sensitivities with us, then, in a sense, we're there.
Yeah. So they actually developed, like he said, they developed two machines. They developed one machine where they could actually see, like a video show or something like that, that they could see the past or they could see what's in the future. Is that right? Did I understand that correctly?
Well, yeah, I think you're pretty close. The idea is you can't just look at a future, come back, and then, you know, expect it to happen.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that premonitions, self-fulfilling prophecies are very, very common. And I definitely think people do it, and I think they're capable of doing it. And I think if more than one person concentrates on the same thing, like a company of people or a family of people, you can definitely make, you know, create your own futures.
Power of thought.
Yeah, it's not just thought, it's intention, too. It's a real directed, certain frequency of thought. It's, and it can be dangerous as well as helpful because some people wish bad things to happen.
Well, that's right. Yeah. You're absolutely right there, I'll tell you. If you get something like that in the wrong hands, you could really have a problem.
I think if it exists, the Nazis probably were
experimenting with things like that. You know.
Well, I think so.
They seem to be so far advanced.
You listened to this program when we had Edgar Mitchell on, and they did the experiment with Olaf Johnson, where they would think of certain shapes here on Earth, and then he would write the shapes down that came to him while he was out in space. And they were like so far beyond statistics. I think it was like 69 or 70 times greater than probability could have predicted. So it was not just limited to Earth. He was like 240,000 miles away in space. And he was writing down symbols that Olaf Johnson and his team here were thinking of.
Wow, that's
so it does prove that the universe is no limit for the human mind.
No. Just that we just don't know how to do it. Well, you know, if you read the scriptures, it says things like that. You know, Jesus, you'll do more than I will do. And what does that mean? Let me get right down to it. What does that mean? It's just that we don't quite know how to do it.
Well, that's true. And most of the scriptures that you read, once you read it, you think, okay, where did this writer come from? How did he get this knowledge? Why is he writing it from this viewpoint and this point of view from the semantics of the language? And once you back away from that, whether you're reading Luke or whether you're reading Haggai or Moses, you begin to realize that there's some pretty amazing visions going on here. And they can't help but write it from their standpoint. That's why so many of them write about the same thing. But what's amazing is that there is a broad range of personality flaws, shall I call it, in the being that is referred to as God in the scriptures.
Well, the thing, you know, what I always look at is the fact that if they were even, if the Spirit was talking to them, they listened, but did they actually write the right thing that they were told to write? You know, man just doesn't get it right. You know, or they start expanding on something that, they expand on something more than they should expand on it. You know, they go too far. Where they don't really, so they're actually saying things that weren't really told to them. They're just saying, yeah, that's what it must be. I mean, that's what I think, anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the other thing to consider is, you know, did they write it down correctly? Was it translated correctly? But it seems to be kind of a self-correcting system in that modern people say, well, okay, so there were some mistranslations and there were some misdescribed things and they threw away things and they added things, but you know what? That's still what God wants us to have, and if you don't believe it, you're going to hell. Well, that's
well, sure sounds that, like
that. It's kind of a self-correcting
system. You just can't take it that serious, certain things, you know. You got to look at this stuff. Like, you know, when you read the scripture, you really got to read it.
Yeah.
And you got to look and see exactly what it says. Not just, you know, like what someone else told you. And not so many people remember what someone told them. You got to look at yourself, and you've got to use your mind and say, what's there? What's the real meaning behind some of those what's there? Eh? I mean, that's the way I look at it. You know, and you know, most, you know, a lot of the stuff like what Andrew said, you know, If you read the scripture, a lot of that stuff is really in there already. So we would be, you know, we would be a lot smarter, you know. We can do anything if we put our minds to it. Nothing is impossible for us.
You know, like nothing is impossible. That's right. And even Jesus said, you'll be able to do these things and more.
Exactly. So, you know, this is just, it's just a matter of we get into it. We got to get into our consciousness. And get deep into our spirits, but we just don't quite know how to do it, and there doesn't just seem to be any books around or any formula how to do it. Somehow it's just gotta somehow come to you, and
Well, I'm not sure I have all the answers, but I am working on a fourth book. It's called Remembering the Future.
Yeah,
and it's going to be a much smaller book, much easier to read. It's going to be around 200 pages. It's going to be out by Christmas. And I think it's going to have a lot of the information you're looking for.
So is it going to be kind of like a fourth book? It's just the answers to the third book?
No, it's sort of the answer to the second part of the third book. I know that sounds kind of cryptic for people that haven't read it. But it isn't part of the Ark of Millions of Years series. This is going to be a standalone book called Remembering the Future.
Okay. Yeah, that should be, but anyways, it was, like I said, it was very, very, very interesting with Andrew. And I look forward to, you know, his book. Or, like you said, it's going to be a movie for Pegasus.
Oh, I can tell you, when that book comes out, it's going to be written into a movie so fast, it's going to make your head spin.
Well, what's going to happen to the world when this comes out? I mean, what is this going to do to religion?
I hope religion falls apart, to tell you the truth. I don't think religion...
When I talk religion, I talk spiritual. Even spiritual, I say, you know, like, you know, I'm spiritual,
right.
You know. So what's that going to do to those people, you know, to when this book comes out? And if it's proven that this guy really did what he did, and these machines are out there, that they can, you know, you can do teleportation, you can time travel. What is that even going to do to spiritual people? What is it going to do to the Arabs and all those, you know, with that type of, well, it's a religion, I guess, you know. I mean, what's it going to do to the world? I mean, that's just, it's going to, you know, just...
Well, I don't know, but it's got to be good. It has to be better than what it is now. Once we figure out how to you know, keep religions from blowing each other out of the water, and start putting everybody on a spiritual path where they realize that, you know, we're all one, and we shouldn't be doing this. Of course, maybe that's part of the experience too. Maybe people, you know, do design to come here and be blown up in a pizza parlor by a random bomber. I don't know. To me, it doesn't sound like the right way to ascension. But that's just my opinion. I think religion needs a real shake-up, to tell you the truth.
Of course it does. I mean, you know, if you read the scriptures, really, very, you know, read it, look at it really closely, you know, and really look at it and study it. When Jesus, he was talking spiritual. He was not talking religion. He was talking spiritual. That's what he, to me anyway, that's what the message was. We have to get into our spirits. And somehow we lost that. Religion just put that under the rug.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you there.
Just put it under the rug. I agree with you. And I try to, you know, and I talk to different people that are quite religious. And I says, you've got to get into the spirit. And, I mean, it's just like, I mean, they thought I was a little crazy, actually. Well, I lose a lot of friends, and a lot of people get upset with me because, you know, I get into this, and I say, you know, you've got to get away from it. But I always say, religion is false, and Jesus is truth. That's exactly what I say. And, you know, and Jesus is spirit. There's no doubt about it. You know, in my opinion.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. I like the idea that you could take your kids to Sunday school and that, you know, they learn some kind of relationship between the spiritual and the physical, and, you know, that they should love each other and treat each other well and sing the songs. I think all those things are wonderful, and the songs are resonant and, you know, create a soft and poignant, very peaceful feeling inside of you. But it's funny because when you hit the front steps of the church and you look across the street to the other church and they're looking back at you, it doesn't matter if you're Baptist and Catholic or Presbyterian and Mormon.
No.
They hate each other.
Well, basically, you know, we're all in a denomination. Like, I'm a Catholic, okay? But that's my denomination. But basically, I'm spiritual. I'm spiritual. My denomination is Catholic. If I was born Baptist, I'd be a Baptist. If I was born Lutheran, I'd be a Lutheran. Just the way it is.
You know? Yeah, I'm with you exactly on that.
And there's no use reason to change because there's problems in everyone.
Well, sure, and all of them will lead you to a certain point in your spiritual growth. And then it's up to you to stand on that and reach further into the cosmos for your own truth.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. You know, you're right on the ballpark, yeah. That's the truth. But they fall short. They don't talk about that part too much.
Well, that's true. I agree with you.
You know, and I said that's where the emphasis should be, is get into the spirit. You know, get into our stuff. Get into our consciousness. Because that's where you got to go. I mean, that's what it's all about. Yeah, we're going to, so this guy's book's going to be out in about a year, you say?
No, this book's going to be out before Christmas. It's going to be out in time for Christmas. Andy's book, I'm not sure.
I'm going to work
as closely as I can with him, but mine's coming out before Christmas.
Yours coming in Christmas, but his going to be out for about a year, probably, eh?
Andy's right, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's going to be unbelievable. You know, Well,
and we may have him on the program again, you know, just to talk about it.
I listen to your program every Sunday, and if I miss it, I just go to the archives, you know.
That's wonderful. Have you told all your neighbors?
You have a great program. You have great guests, and I mean, you're such an intelligent person, you know what you're talking about, you know, and you ask the right questions to these people, you know, and you just don't. You know, they just don't tell you anything because you can tell that they're really, they know what they're really talking about because, you know, you've got like a bunch of the bees yourself.
I appreciate that. I try to read as much as I can, and of course, you know, got the 30 years of religious training behind me, and I would like to say it's spiritual training, but most of it's religious training. And then, 3 years of being awake since 2006, so...
What actually happened there? I don't know if you want to ever talk about that.
It was a moment in meditation that I've actually had it happen several times, but that was the first in my life where when Paul was struck blind, knocked down,
right.
And Jesus came to him and said, why do you kick against the pricks? And he asked, who are you? And he identified himself, and Paul changed. Paul went from being Saul to being Paul.
Right.
Well, I'm not saying I was a wicked person, but I was certainly locked into the physical and the engineering world, and gee, I need to have proof and data and all this measurement stuff, which I still do. I'm still a scientist, and I'm still regimented in that. But, that was the day that I discovered that you can actually take measurements and hear things with your body, and... I have had visions and dreams before in my life, but that was the first time that I actually awakened. I actually became aware of other energies and other thoughts and other presences around me. And it changed the way that I look at life. And it changed the way I work with my family, and it changed the way I love. And it certainly changed the way I engineer things on a much, much more accelerated rate. So it also downloaded a lot of information into me, which I am still assimilating. It was sort of like plugging into a hyper-learning machine and getting 10 years of college education in about 9 minutes.
So you remembered it all.
Well, the thing about remembering it is you remember it, but you have no idea what it means until the time comes when that piece falls in place that you figure out, oh, I know what that means now.
So were you actually in contact with somebody?
I was actually contacted. I was contacted by an individual, a male individual, who explained some things to me, and I was also in contact with what sounded to me like the most amazing choir you've ever heard in your life, like 10,000 voices, all kinds of harmonies and melodies in there that you can't imagine, all singing the same thing at the same time. It was the most all-encompassing body, mind, spirit experience I've ever had. I likened it to the shepherds that were on the hill when Jesus was born. And the angels, the host of heaven came down. We don't really know what a host is, but a host of heaven came down and scared the heck out of the shepherds. And they said, "Fear not, for we bring you great tidings," or tidings of great joy. Good tidings of great joy. That's what it was like. Good tidings of great joy.
Was there a kind of a message in there that they wanted you to do something? Like you were, you're like an ambassador or something like that?
Well, yes, but I didn't figure it out until Monday. That happened on Saturday night. I had no idea why this happened. I just knew that I felt different. I was different. When I got home on Monday, I contacted the board of the expedition, which I was only a member of, and found out that the expedition leader had unexpectedly, very suddenly, died. And they were looking for another leader to the expedition, and they elected me to be that leader. Then I understood why I got what I got. And for the last 3 years...
Okay. But he didn't give you any hints like that about that. That just came about after
he didn't. No, not at all. I mean, it just dumped in my lap, and it was like I was called, and then it was up to me to choose.
So it was your decision. So you had to act on it. He downloaded all this stuff on, but you had to act on it.
Right. It's mine to give up. That's for sure.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that would be quite an experience. Yeah, that was unreal. Wow. That's
it's pretty. It was pretty amazing, and I still remember it like it was yesterday.
And you remember everything, like everything is still in your subconscious or whatever, everything that was downloaded. But what you have to do is figure out what it all means, right?
Yeah, I sat down. I got some information that was in like bars of information, like two bars and then a single bar, and I finally figured out what it was. Because I got exposed to the I Ching, which is a 4,000-year-old method of writing symbols down, and it matches up with what's called a Kwa, which is a very, very, very old, like 4,000-year-old book of philosophy. So I went back to my lab notebook where I'd written this stuff down, and I opened up the I Ching book, and I looked up the symbols. And it was pretty darn amazing, the messages that came out of those symbols. Very cool. And I can tell you that the expedition will take place. Nothing will stop it. And it will take place at exactly the appointed time. Not a time that I have set, but a time that it has set.
Okay. So there's no way of knowing when it actually will happen, but will it happen when it's supposed to happen?
I will say 2010 feels right. I thought 2009 was it. I really did. In 2008,
we
finally got organized after Stephen Curry died, and we thought, okay, 2009, we'll set our sights on that. We'll raise the money and we'll go. Because I've done much larger projects than that. I've done $20 million projects on $300 million projects. This was a $2 million project.
It wouldn't be that
hard. The darn thing was impossible. I couldn't find an investor on planet Earth to back that thing.
Well,
so, what's that?
Just wasn't the right time.
Well, that's what came to me, and I had peace with it. It just wasn't the right time. But the people that I've been speaking to and my own inner meditations, 2010 feels like the right year. I really didn't want to face that in 2008. I thought, no, we can put this together. We have 18 months. We can do it. But it didn't happen. It was like, and it was kind of interesting, you know, Tony, the people that blocked it, the people that were working against it, it was a jealousy and greed energy that was coming out of the very genre that I was working in. I started getting, little attacks on the YouTubes and little emails here and there, and then a couple magazine articles came out. And there are people out there that don't even believe I exist. They think Brooks Agnew is just a made-up character. So,
you're kidding.
Exactly.
Well, I heard things. I remember when I first started talking to you, and I was on the internet, and they were saying, this book, he doesn't have any degrees. That's all just a bunch of fake stuff. He doesn't have all that stuff he says he has. You know, that's what they were saying. And I said,
my college professors would be very, very disappointed to hear that. And this two diplomas that I'm looking at here on the wall. People can say what they want to say, and they have nothing, no facts to back it up, but they can still say what they want to say. The interesting thing is, you talk about government agents, and you talk about militaries blocking us or not allowing us to go. That isn't it at all. I mean, they don't really care whether we go or whether we don't go. But there's so much jealous energy out there, and I think what's going to happen is that energy just has to lose its fire and lose its confidence and just disappear, go by the wayside, because this is all about positive energy. It's all about a non-profit effort to discover a place of our planet that nobody has ever seen before.
That's right. Well, you've had different people on your program that have said, that the Earth was hollow and there was people living down there, and then of course you say, well, those guys must be kooks, but, And of course they're all saying, most of the planets are hollow, eh? And then, of course, there's this theory about the moon. It's not really a planet. It's somebody moved it here or something like that, eh? So, there's so much out there, but it seems a lot of this stuff might be true.
Well, I think so. I try to have an open mind. I'm not saying that there aren't cities there. I'm not saying that there are. I'm not saying that there's an opening into the inner Earth. And I'm not saying there's not. I'm saying nobody's ever been to see. So let's go find out for ourselves.
Absolutely.
Quit playing around.
Right. Well, this has been great talking to you, Brooks. I should let you go so someone else can talk. Phone in.
Well, I appreciate it, Tony.
Appreciate
actually,
my call.
We have 1 minute left, so you got the last minute on the program.
Okay.
All right, Tony. Have a great day.
Well, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, Earth Explorers, I will play my exit music, which you will not hear for some reason, but we're going to figure it out, and we will see you next week right here on X Squared Radio.
It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day, and before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio, saying, Peace, Earth Explorers.